the leadership role, and I was giving basically the whole spectrum of what it means doing aid work nowadays.
Dr. Joanne Liu, we thank you so much for being with us, Canadian pediatric emergency medicine physician, associate professor of medicine at University of Montreal, professor of clinical medicine at McGill University, and former head of Doctors Without Borders.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. As always, we promise robust conversations. So we thank you for listening here on KFAI, FM 90.3 and KFAI.org from anywhere around the world. And we want to know where you are, who you are. Shoot us an email or drop us a note. We're streaming the program live on several platforms. We're on YouTube. It's YouTube Insight News MN. That's how you get us on YouTube. Also YouTube Black Press USA. We're on Facebook and we are also on LinkedIn. And if you are connecting on any of those platforms, drop a note, tell us hello. Most of all, do this for us. Become a subscriber, help us grow our reach, and help us grow this channel, this work. Well, I want to begin by introducing a friend and colleague, a guy that I've had a relationship with for years and years and years here in North Minneapolis, and am always excited to have him on, and that's Michael Chaney. I also want to bring on my co-host for the day, another one of my long-term, long-time friends and colleagues, Jonathan Palmer. Michael, Jonathan, brothers, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good day. Thanks for having us.
Great to see you, everybody.
Okay, and then we've got one more guest that I'll have you introduce, Michael, who's here as part of your team. And that's Glenda Young. Tell me the right last name. I'm saying the right way.
Glenda, why don't you speak for yourself?
Glenda Young Shinnick. I'm working with Project SWE-PI through AMPACT.
Awesome. Welcome. Welcome. Well, thank you all for being here. And we're going to talk about Project SWE-PI, an important event coming up in a couple of days, April 4th, over at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. I think it's called the 2025 Environmental Summit. And the theme of it is Roots of Resilience and Strength, Strengthening Communities Through Love. Love is an acronym for Land, Opportunity, Voice, and Equity. We'll talk about that in the course of this program. Before I get into that, Jonathan, let me kick it with you for a minute and just say, ask you what's on your mind as you're following the headlines of the past several weeks and the things going on in our national and international view. How are you doing, Jonathan?
Thanks, Al. Well, you know, it is. I don't know that there is going to be a good answer to that question for a while. Watching the chaos that is happening on the national level, seeing the things that the current administration is doing, it is, I can only say, insane. And we watch this happening, and there's a lot of barrel rolling to try to freak people out and massively do things before the courts catch up. So looking at Signalgate and what has happened with that and the fact that there's been no accountability, and looking at the distraction that was issued over the weekend of the new Restoring Sanity to History That's not the full name, but it's close enough. So they're going to be going through and restoring the Smithsonian, correcting history and making sure that it's not anything divisive. And I'm hoping that there's enough push to say, that's a great idea. Let's go ahead and correct the record for real. Let's remove the divisive pieces.
Michael, you need to mute me because I'll get your background noise, Michael, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Go ahead, John. The white supremacy, the turn, I was talking with some friends internationally. We're going to be going to Scotland this summer and talking with some of them because the impact the tariffs are having over there and trying to understand the system and what we have. And as I went through the explanation, one of my colleagues was saying, well, you know, you've got to understand the U.S. has been involved in wars all over the world. We've saved the world and we've gone ahead and haven't gotten anything returned. And that's what this whole push is. And I said, well, you know, actually, the global economy was started by the transatlantic slave trade. And if you look at the impact that that has had on the American economy and the development of our national GDP, and the fact that at the end of slavery, the 4 million that were enslaved were worth approximately 3.5 billion, which translates into 115 billion today. So in essence, Africans and African Americans accounted for the entire U.S. economy in the start of this. And we're not asking right now or getting anything in terms of reparations. So to look at the rest of the world and try to say they owe something, I think we need to take care of the debt at home first. Lastly, I just wanted to mention that we've lost a number of people in recent weeks. A lot of my colleagues from Hallie Q. Brown, Mildred Brunson, Betty Cordes, Dorothea Burns. And this week we will celebrate the life of Gordy Kirk, who was over 100, who was at the Battle of the Bulge. He was one of the Hallie Q. Brown retired men. And just 2 days ago, I think it was, we lost Charles Williams Jr. He is an icon, one of the first families in Rondo. He was the chair of the board when I was at Hallie, a mentor and a friend, father to Paul Williams and Charles Williams locally. So it's been a real hard time for the African-American community to just take the weight of these great icons that were here, and we've lost them. So.
And so as you think about, you know, those losses, how do you balance that, Jonathan? There's got to be a way for us to always lean into and sit in our own resilience, our own confidence that despite it all, there's something special, unique. There's a genius at play, and that genius is the life that we live and the existence that we reflect. And so, you know, how do you balance that personally? You said you're going to be traveling to Scotland. How do you navigate all of the trepidations of uncertainty being caused by the lunacy at the White House and the emergence of this last call for white supremacist thought? You know, Mahmoud Al-Qaeda always says, you know, look at these times with a certain confidence because you're witnessing the dying breath of an anachronism, something that has no place, that never had a place, but it's on its way out. And so take comfort in knowing that all these machinations of grandeur and power coming out of the white supremacist ideology are simply the reflections of something that in itself is expiring. What do you think about that?
I 1,000% agree. I mean, this is, if you look at what is happening, this rapid fire approach is because it is dying. This is the last gas. It is a Hail Mary play that they're trying to throw everything at the wall to try to make it stick. And what we need to do is hold on to the principles and the efforts that we already have in place, our community, which is one of the strongest ones, the resilience and the endurance we've had. We've got community organizations. We're going to talk about Project Sweetie Pie, which has been doing great work for a long time in the community, and the work that can help us sustain throughout this time. That's what you got to hold on to. And especially, we got a younger generation that has been coming up. Al, we've had a number of them on the show. They are fire. I mean, it has just been amazing, because I often think I'm 18 just because my mind is still there wanting to get out there and do all the energy. Sure. And then I watch some of the young people we've had on the show, and I'm reminded very quickly, no, I'm not. And we're in good hands. So I'm looking forward to that and holding on to that as we go forward.
That's awesome. Michael Cheney, come on in, brother. Good to see you. And yeah, always a pleasure to be in dialogue and conversation with you. And you are one of the visionaries in our community, one of the, I call it the revolutionary playmakers, a person that moved on a very practical and tangible, visible level to create a sense of connectivity to both history, to the present, in a way that reveals our relationship to our environment, our surroundings, and in doing so, projects a future that is nurturing, and that we have the responsibility for. And you've described to us and for us what our responsibility is, and encouraged us that we have the capacity to fulfill the obligations that we operate with in community and in culture. Michael, welcome once again. How you doing, man?
On top of the world, brother, on top of the world. And first of all, I wanted to salute those soldiers who came before us in St. Paul and Minneapolis, and the pioneers who have been leading the fight for liberation, trying to have modern day freedom fighters, abolitionists, one and all. My hat is off to them. North Minneapolis is going green. Give us a call and learn what we mean. Where once lie urban blight, now sits luscious garden sites. Gardens without borders, classrooms without walls, architects of our own destinies, access to food, justice for all. And now, like sweet potato vines, our missions and goals all intertwine. From the educated elite to the foot soldiers in the street, out of these caves to the middle of the stage where we can get people engaged, thus bringing those who've been stranded historically on the sidelines into the front lines. So as always, Al, again, I want to salute you and the nation building efforts that Insight has always been clairvoyant and leading the way so that we can grow the next generation of growers. Project Sweetie Pie, for those who may not have been maybe living in a cave or not eating any food, we are a nonprofit. We started in 2010 as an effort to really support and fight back against North High, because there were those who wanted to bring to an end North High. And myself and others, we felt that the killing of a school is the killing of the heart of any community. And so we rallied together to fight that. And so as a result, we approached North High and asked them that if we could get North Minneapolis youth to start planting vegetables, could we utilize the green room? And thus Project Sweetie Pie was born. Project Sweetie Pie, the story of a community that came together, work together for the common good of the youth and families of its community, for it takes a village to raise a child. We're growing good in the neighborhood. Good food, good schools, good youth and families. Education never tasted so good. So over the last 15 years, we have been holding it down, boots on the ground, almost as if Nostradamus, that much of what we anticipated has really finally come into view. And so But it didn't take a genius. It doesn't take a genius to realize that wars are fought and won over food supply. And if you are a community that has no skills in that area, then you are at the mercy of those who would oppress you. And so we created over the last 15 years, we created the first urban farm legislation in the nation. It's called the Agri Grant. You can apply to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for up to $50,000 as seed money. You can be a for-profit, nonprofit, faith-based organization, for-profit organization. This last year, they gave out $3.5 million. We also have created a food program, another proud accomplishment. For the last 12 years at Oak Park Neighborhood Center, 1701 Oak Park, you can, between the hours of 4 and 6 on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, you can come and get a free home-cooked meal. We are feeding between 200 and 300 people an evening. Another accomplishment that we are currently, and I don't know if I dare say this on air, but the secret is out. We actually have a partnership, not with Elon Musk, but with his brother, Kimball, who's out in Denver, Colorado. Who he has a company called the Big Green Org. And we are... it's a project called Foster Green, adopt a lot, adopt a plot, adopt a garden box, turning the blue line green. A lot of us think that the real battle is about growing food. I disagree. The real mission before us is not growing food, Jonathan, Al, to your point, it's about growing growers and passing the baton to the next generation so that the same way that some of us, many of us learned from our grandparents, Project Sweetie Pie is basically a surrogate organization that's really trying to bring that ancient knowledge of agriculture and horticulture and trying to use it to plant the seeds of change. People ask me, they say, well, are you a grower? And I say, yeah, I'm a grower, but that's not really what I'm doing. They say, well, what are you doing? I say, I claim that I am an egg patriot. I'm using agriculture as a platform, as a forum to really grow the knowledge, skills, and confidence, and really implement and operationalize what I call public service, the breakfast of champions. And so how do we bring together community to grow these skills so that we can create a ribbon of resiliency and we can address food insecurity, we can address global warming, climate change.
Introduce Glenda and the work she's doing with Project Sweetie Pie.
Well, Glenda needs no introduction. She is a Northside youth, and so Glenda, why don't you share your food journey, your origin story, and why you felt compelled to get involved in what we're doing here?
Hello. So I've done a little bit of like food growing. A couple years back, I lived on a vegetable farm for like a month. And then last year, I got reconnected with Project Sweetie Pie because I used to come up to North High School and talk about fermented foods, microgreens. And I like working with community, and I wanted to get back connected with the community and get more in touch with nature. So I've been working with Project Sweetie Pie, and you know, we do like events for the community. We built a hookah culture build last year, and now we're getting ready to do our summit with the U of M on Friday. And one of my things that I like to do is try to build community. And I think food really brings people together. And as I've worked with Project Sweetie Pie, I've got to see it in the works of like people coming together to plant food, to harvest food, and then eating meals together. And it's such a beautiful thing. And I'm excited to see, like, how this plays out on Friday with people coming together and talking about climate change and talking about food justice and environmental justice and how we can all come together to bring some change, not only community members, but organizations, you know, all coming together to talk about climate justice. Yeah.
And Michael, when you're not talking, you have to mute because there's background noise where you are at some of your house. And so, Glenda, your personal story, are you a North Minneapolis person? Are you from North Side, or where are you from?
Yeah, I grew up in North Minneapolis. I graduated from North High School. Yeah, I'm from North.
So I'm curious, you know, as a product of North Minneapolis, how do you feel your peer group, young people in general, look at and see themselves in the context of, say, the food production system? How does your community, your age group, think about or not think about, you know, the economy, the economics of being in this neighborhood? I know you have witnessed the what they call regentrification of the community over the years. More and more of our people have moved out, and white people have moved into North Minneapolis. It's a different neighborhood, but those of us that are still here are people that are proud of the community we're in. And we also recognize that the social environment that we operate in always casts a negative light on Black people, Black culture, created a public persona that made it easy for our communities to not receive the resources we needed, and for us not to think that we should organize and demand those resources, though we have, you know. But how was growing up for you in North Minneapolis? When you were a kid, what was the neighborhood like? And then sort of walk us through how you became aware over time.
So, like, in like early before, like, first grade, my mom had us in the suburbs. But my sister was getting like a lot of racist stuff going on. So we moved to North Minneapolis. And my view of North Minneapolis is there's a lot of, or at least when I was younger, there's a lot of activities like with the park boards and with different things for young people to do. That's not super expensive. So I remember going on like field trips and going and doing a lot of stuff with the park boards and with my community, and it not being $5,000 or something crazy like that. I played basketball, I played football, I ran track. All the things you can do in North Minneapolis, I was there to do it. The Boys and Girls Club had lots of stuff to do. There's a moment where I lived across the street from the Boys and Girls Club. I could just go over there and hang out. Well, my mom, she works a bunch. She'd be working. Could go and do that. So I think there's a lot of stuff for young people to do that's not like super expensive. And then, but I think, so like, as I've watched through the years, I've seen many people I grew up with go down different paths. Some people are going to college and going and doing a whole bunch of different things. And I'm so proud of so many people. And some people went down the other path, and having to see like lots of death. But there's also a lot of beauty, and especially with North High School, I know that the teachers must have been working really hard to make sure we knew our history, Black history, because there's so many different things that I wouldn't have known about if I didn't go to North, because there's so many people I've talked to, and there's stuff I learned in high school about history that people I know that have went off to college or went to different schools don't know about their history and about our history in Minnesota. So I think there's good and there's bad, but like, I feel like half of it has to do with what support you have at home and what groups you decided to join, what like your curiosity as a person, but also what support you have. So I think one thing, it's important for people to build community with each other and to try to connect with young people. And we gotta find ways to help out young people, because I've seen bright minds go far, and then I've seen people that had so much potential end up dead. So, you know.
That's a good sort of a review of growing up in North Minneapolis. You know, I live in North Minneapolis, Glenda, and I've lived here since way before you were born. But I love this community and I love our people. And I think that what keeps me motivated and excited about being here is people, young people like you, and those that are younger than you, that despite the odds being stacked against us, move forward with a certain fierceness and a certain confidence. And yes, many find themselves derailed and marginalized, pushed to the edge, but many more find a way to stay focused and to stay encouraged and to stay positive and to stay rooted in the messages and the legacy of our parents and our parents' parents and our grands, right? And many, I think, see ourselves as a part of a continuum on a mission. And the mission, Glenda, is this fulfillment of our destiny as human beings. And it's something that we know we both have both a right and a responsibility to live fulfilled and fulfilling lives. But we also believe that every other human being on the planet is accorded the same opportunity. Jonathan, Michael, jump in. I love conversations like this because it takes us to, you know, the real sense of in my mind, the divinity of our existence. We have a right to be here. And our presence here is not negotiable. And I think that we operate with the confidence that keeps us moving forward in the future. Jonathan, what do you think?
I think that's definitely true. And, you know, there is a concerted effort right now on the national level to move us out of here, to take away Black and brown people. They're trying every effort, from, you know, deporting people to eliminating jobs to all of the nonprofits are being attacked on the idea of DEI language in their grants and in their programming. They're being forced to remove that. Some are doing it because they need to, and there's no shame in that. Some are taking a stand. And here's how ridiculous this is. They're using AI to scan through grants and proposals and websites, and it's picking up language that doesn't make sense. So they will pick up transportation, but they're removing it because it's trans, says trans in there. And so suddenly that program is no longer funded because AI doesn't know how to distinguish between transportation and transgender. And the administration is using the "is this your card" method of going ahead and sorting through that. It is reprehensible what they're doing. They just have a long list, and they're going to be throwing everything at us. One of the things that I think is really good, though, is the climate change aspect. That's a field that we're not generally expected to be in. But I just got back from the 10th annual HBCU Climate Change Conference that's put on by the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice. And it was phenomenal to see Black and Brown people all over the country doing work on climate change, doing research on environmental issues, doing deep sea diving exploration, looking at pollution, looking at what was happening in the natural world, natural disasters. All of these things are connected. And I think the average person doesn't think about the connection of environmental justice and racism. And the fact that when you look at things like the highways being put through communities, that deals with environmental justice. When you look at the absence of water and green space within community, we're talking about environmental justice. So this is taking it to a whole new level with what Glenda and Michael are doing and what's happening out there, because of the fact that there's aspects we haven't looked at that haven't been explored about the absence in our community of things that we deserve, things that are in the suburbs and the suburbs get and nobody questions, but the asphalt and the concrete that's in the inner city is usually what they think we deserve. And that's just not the case.
So Michael, jump in here. You know, Jonathan, I always tell people, and I say this to Michael all the time, he caught my attention one day when he was talking about urban farming. And he said this phrase that I cannot forget. I can't get it out of my head. He said, "I see Plymouth Avenue as the Nile of North Minneapolis." And so the vision of the Nile, the source of life. And so here's the person that had the audacity to imagine our street, Plymouth Avenue, a street that had been maligned, right, and made a place and point of fear and ridicule, had been a battleground. And Michael Chaney comes up with a vision that says this is a place where life emanates, where it grows. Michael, I love that, and I always talk about it. But as we talk about the environment and where we are, why is the conference coming up so important? What kinds of things are we going to be examining over the course of the conference?
Well, again, you know, if we fail to plan, we plan to fail. And that's one of the things that's oftentimes bothered me about North Minneapolis and Minneapolis and the Black community. For 50 years, been wanting us to come together, you know, out of some of the work of Harry Davis back there when there was some stronghold where that was happening in some degree. But right now we're running around like chickens with our heads cut off, like Keystone Cops, where we don't know who's on first and we don't know who's on second, because they've created this isolation and insulation. And so it's critical that we move forward as In Rhythm Nation to really create and imagine a future. And so this is why we're bringing together neighborhood organizations, you know, really actually operationalizing some of the stuff that Professor Mark Moog used to talk about, Communiversity. And so he is clearly one of my mentors, one of my role models, an elder that I deeply love and respect. And so how do you go beyond the language and the theory to really amplify and implement this? And so what I say that we're doing is that we are operationalizing the goal, the sustainable development goals. And historically, it's been a top-down approach where, you know, they basically, the environmental movement has been an apartheid movement. ISIL that's really kept us out of the game, a gated community. Why? Because if you control the narrative, you control the resources. And so I think it's, you know, one of the things I like to say in life is you can either be ahead of the train or you get run over by the bus. And so what we've been trying to do with Project Sweetie Pie in the last 15 years, when people thought that I was crazy, that why in the world would they be planting gardens? What is wrong with that madman? is he insane? But no, it was really recognizing that we needed this knowledge, we needed this skill. They keep us and BIPOC communities so busy chasing the police and the police chasing us that we're really paralyzed in the 18th century. And so there's really hasn't been much work by legacy organizations to move us forward into the 21st century and beyond. And so that's what this conversation at IONE, it's a partnership with the university that we birthed about 3 years ago. And we're bringing all hands on deck, all hands on deck, Torah, dive, to really do a deep dive and to bring together the scholars and the people in our community so that we can advance what I'm calling a food-focused future. What does that mean? So at first we were trying to do what we were doing at, we wanted to buy a greenhouse in Dowling and Humboldt. We lost that opportunity. We then shapeshift to look at, can we do our Wakanda? Let's build Wakanda at the Upper Harbor Terminal. We lost that battle. So rather than give up or become stranded along life's road, we've now shapeshift to create what I'm calling in response to the 2040 plan, birthed by the city of Minneapolis, the creation of cultural corridors, to create the North Star Urban Farm and Food Corridor, a food-focused future. What does that mean? Well, that means that on the corner of Broadway and 4th Avenue, that Tito Wilson got $500,000 to do create what he's calling Schwenk. On the corner of Broadway and Oliver, Neon got $6 million to do their commercial kitchen. We have Kemp's, we have Cub Foods, we have the cookie cart. So not, you know, being left behind, Project Sweetie Pie, we acquired the land on Broadway and Thomas, and we're creating the Black Star Line Fruit and Vegetable Emporium. This summer, we're going to bring up watermelons, we're going to bring up pecans and peaches, and then watermelon, fresh watermelon. In other words, we have to take our, follow the lead of history. Nothing that I'm saying is new. I didn't invent Black Star Line. That's Marcus Garvey. You know, I didn't create the North Star, follow the North Star. That was Harriet Tubman, that the road to freedom was to follow the North Star. So what I've done is I've been a prospector, a time traveler, who has gone throughout our Black history, recognized high points. Because I say that oftentimes we bemoan the fact that when we talk about intergenerational wealth. Folks, our intergenerational wealth is our collective Black history. And if we were really to acknowledge that and accept that, the food program in the Minneapolis public schools, that was invented by the Black Panthers. And so how do we move forward to really identify those profiles and bring them forward? So we've created some new tools in our tool belt. So we have the North Star Urban Farm and Food Corridor, Broadway, our Black Wall Street, a food-focused future. We're creating the North Star Urban Farm and Food Digest. That's our 21st century yellow pages. And its tagline is, we want you to get connected. The North Star Urban Farm and Food Registry. That's our 21st century white pages. And its tagline is, isn't it time you got into the picture? And last but not least, we're creating Sankofa, the North Star Urban Farm and Food Digital Platform. So imagine Wikipedia meets Amazon.com. I took the work of a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture. And a farmer will go out into the community and he'll find his customer base and they will advance him his money so that he can buy his seeds, pay for his personnel, hire his equipment. It's no different than what a gold miner did in the 18th century when he went and got a grub stake. And so instead of us just being singular, angular, So why don't we create what I call a vertical resiliency resource rack? Let's identify all of the stakeholders, partners. Let's bring them into the digest. And then all of the people, the allies, our customer base is in our white pages, because I believe there's more people who are opposed to what Donald Trump is doing than those who accept it. But we as thought leaders have not created the bridge. We have not created the language to really give them some guidance and direction on how they should respond. I'm not really overwhelmed by what's going on in the country, because I believe that the power has always been in our hands, and that we do not recognize the power that we possess. But if we can really cobble together Dee Dee Fuller, who has her salsa and her pickles, Derek Ellis, a brother on the north side that actually has pigs in his backyard,
really,
in his backyard. Really? You know, these are young people who aren't asking permission, that aren't waiting for Armageddon. They're moving forward with the fierceness of light to really take their into the find solutions for problems at hand. And so, to me, liberation is at hand. And we've seen this before. We've seen this during the oil embargo that happened in Cuba. And now what? Cuba is the leader in the world who recognized that necessity is the mother of invention. And so they took back their power. They created their own economies and their own resiliency, what I call a ribbon of resiliency, so that they could support the people in their country. So that's what we're doing. And then last but not least, we're creating the financial. So we've got the Black Star Line. That's the in-city farm stand. And then last, we're creating a financial literacy project that I call Expand Us. And that tagline is, we deliver the goods. So we're not waiting on anybody. We're not asking permission from anybody. We're not saying Simon says, may I. We are taking our destiny in our hands, and we are putting it into play. Project Sweetie Pie, there's four stages. Stage one is scattered gardens. Stage two is social media. Stage three is season extension. And stage four is what I call pi squared, green to the second power. And that talks about the creation of workforce strategies and green enterprises and green jobs training. So we are moving forward to really maneuver, get ahead of the bus, and really create a robust economy using innovation as the where art meets ag grows culture. How do we transform a community that's been socially engineered to be consumers into becoming producers? Because you can't live in a for-profit society if you don't have some skills or service. This is a modern day version of the Black Pages, but moving it forward into the 21st century.
Jonathan, jump in.
That is really good work, Michael. I mean, this is just the kind of thing that the community needs, the infrastructure that will help create and support to connect people to good resources, to good food, and to understand healthy and good things that can help keep our community growing in a way that is not the typical methodology. You know, it's always so easy to go and get some fast food and pick that up and just eat that, as you don't have to do anything. But the health impact of the kind of nutritious food that you're talking about, and the economic impact that will have on the community, is something that really can launch a change for us and help us move forward. I think that's just really great.
The same young people that we want to see eating this food ought to be growing this food and ought to be receiving remuneration for their efforts. And so we can look back in history to the work of Operation Push, right? To the bus boycott, to the garbage boycott and garbage trucks, because those students in those schools are our children. And if we were to shut down, step down, and shut it down and say we shouldn't be asking for a contract, we should be demanding it. And if we can aggregate, if we can accelerate, and if we can elevate our game, now we can really move forward to really set up some markets. We should be doing that with the Minneapolis public school system. And so this summer, we're doing a project called the Circle of Life. The partners in that are going to be 140 students through the Guides and Gems program. And students from Minneapolis Park and Rec are going to be working in partnership with Project Sweetie Pie and C-Tech, Michael Lucini, and the Career Tech that they're building a horticulture aeroponics problem in the Minneapolis Public Schools. And so we're really bringing those young people out of C-Tech. Instead of schools out, teacher let the fools out. Let's put them to work as mentors to really support those middle school kids that are in summer school who are trying to make good, make up some grades. And then let's bring those Guides and Gems people who are now inform, infuse, inspired, instruct. Let's bring them back around into the Career Tech program. So again, we really need to figure out how do we mobilize, how do we energize, and how do we actualize, you know, some of these strategies where we're creating our own revenue stream. As we're doing Expand Us and the Black Star Line Fruit and Vegetable Emporium as a pilot this year, my goal is next year to have a kiosk at the U.S. Bank Stadium, where we're not just promoting all of our resources of all of our valuable entrepreneurs in North Minneapolis, but we're also doing it in the sports arena, the folks that have the kind of disposable income. Let's find out really who does embrace this agenda of Donald Trump, who is not trying to take us back to Jim Crow era. They're trying to take us back to the dark ages.
Yes, that is very true. And we need efforts like this to keep moving ahead. I know you've got your conference on the 8th. Also, I know tomorrow Reconnect Rondo has Dr. Robert Bullard, father in environmental justice, is going to be here. I'm actually on a panel there with the group. And so elevating this idea of environmental justice, putting that to the forefront, and being able to get young people engaged and involved, that is the future of our community, helping to get them connected into programs like yours, Michael, that really can show them a new opportunity, a new direction that they may not have even thought of, that most people don't think of for our community and our youth. So this is a lot.
I'm looking here and I see in the chat that Senator Tina Smith is here. And there is a person who, you know, I would really like all of us to meet with as well. Hello, hello, Senator.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jonathan. Hi, Al. Hi, Glenda.
Hey, Tina.
Great to see you.
Yeah, thank you for catching that, Michael. Senator, how are you?
I'm well, and I was just enjoying hearing Michael talk about Project Sweetie Pie and all of the work that you all are doing to engage Black youth, youth of color in urban communities around farming and food. It gives me a sense of optimism to hear the work that you're doing today.
Well, what's on your mind? What are you working on right now?
Well, I'll tell you, I was just on the Senate floor where I was bearing witness to my dear friend Cory Booker, mm-hmm. who has been holding the floor of the United States Senate for nearly 20 hours, talking about what is happening with the Trump administration, the damage that it is doing to our democracy, and to our you know, families and humans in this country. And You know, what that means is that he stood up in front of his desk on the Senate floor at around 7 o'clock last night, and he has not sat down or left his desk in all this time. Some of us have been there on the floor to give him moral support and to ask him some questions so he can rest his voice a little bit, but he's not able to rest his feet because he has been standing that entire time. And it is such a such an object lesson in the power of human perseverance to change the dynamic. And of course, I see that lesson every day with all of the work that you all do, but it's really impressive.
Senator, explain the why. I'm glad you brought that up and pointed that out. Explain how this works. What's the intent? And well, what should we be learning from it? And how can we support it from community?
Well, all of us have been hearing when we come home, we have been hearing just the anguish and the fear and the exhaustion that people are feeling as they watch the actions of Donald Trump and Elon Musk literally tear apart the things that we hold the most dear in this country. And to basically be telling us every step of the way that what we do doesn't matter, that what we think doesn't matter, that we don't have any power to change the dynamic. And it has been just so terrible. And so what Corey wants to do is to, in one very important way, show that we understand that these are not normal times and that we need to do extraordinary things. And what he is doing is certainly extraordinary as a feat of human perseverance and endurance. But he's been using all of that time to tell stories and to tell, read letters that he's gotten from constituents about what it means for Donald Trump to Elon Musk to dismantle Medicaid, to dismantle Social Security, to take away nutrition assistance. And I think he wants us all to see this and be inspired and motivated to realize that we do have the power to change what's happening in this country. And
how do we change? Is it only the question of the midterms as the portal for change, or are there things we can be doing right now?
Yeah, so, you know, what Corey just said a bit ago that I think is so important for us all to remember is that, you know, change in this country doesn't come from Washington. It comes to Washington. And that is an insight when you think about the civil rights movement, when you think about the women's suffrage movement. None of those changes happened because a bunch of people sitting in the Senate said, oh, you know, yeah, we're wrong. We're going to let Black people vote. We're wrong. We're going to let women vote. It happened because of pressure from the outside in. And that is what I think we all can do. You know, this coming Saturday, there's going to be a rally and a demonstration. And I think that's just one of thousands of opportunities. You know, it is not just, oh, we need to vote in the midterms, though of course we need to. That's 20 months away from now. But we need to push both parties. The Democratic Party, we need to push the Democratic Party to be a better, different, changed party. If that makes sense to you, I think
it does. I mean, the question I have then is who's dragging their feet? I mean, so a lot of social media around the country is dragging the Democratic Party, the leaders of the progressive, even for not going far enough and for not really fighting for the principles. And there's been a criticism that there's a willingness to move to the center, meaning adopt Republican strategies, not strategy, but policies in a conciliatory tone that surrenders principles, point of view, and cherished values. And so how do people not lose hope in leadership? You know, if they see that is what they're describing. At the same time, they're seeing other voices in the party stand strong. So what's your take?
Well, so, I mean, I think we need to change the party and change the country. And I think that we have so many exciting leaders, new leaders coming up. And so there's that piece of it. But I want to just go back to what you said a minute ago, Al, about how, should we go to the center, or should we try to be less controversial, or somehow try to smooth over our differences? And I can tell you, I mean, I've been involved in politics and community organizing for a long time, and I have never seen success when you try to be a pale shadow of your opposition. That does not work, you know, and I don't actually think this is a left versus right issue, because the vast majority of Americans believe in some of our most progressive values. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of Americans believe that everybody should have access to healthcare as a human right. The vast majority of Americans think that housing is something that everybody needs in order to live a happy and productive life. The vast majority of Americans believe that, if you have the tools to cut child poverty in half in this country, you ought to use those tools, because to do otherwise is a policy choice that you're making, not to lift children out of poverty. So to me, this is not a left versus right issue. It is about whether you're willing to be, you know, strong in your views and not be afraid of your own shadow sometimes.
So Senator Smith, what are you hearing from the community, from the street? I'm hearing that things are pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Pretty bad, and that what's happening out of the White House and out of the Musk presidency is despicable, mm-hmm. right, in so many mm-hmm. ways. Now, are you hearing that, or are we being paranoid on the ground in the community? And when you hear people like Al McFarland say, boy, you know, the stuff is really funky right now, does that mm-hmm. resonate with you? Does it resonate with yeah. your colleagues? And where do we go with that?
No, it very much does resonate. And, my mother used to say, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone isn't out to get you. And I think that's on my mind today, which would have been my mother's 93rd birthday. What I am hearing from my constituents is, to give you an idea, on a normal day in my office, Al, we might have 100 people give us a phone call, maybe send an email or a letter. On some days over the last couple of weeks, we'd had that number has been more like 4,000.
Wow.
So huge energy. A lot of it is driven by people's fears, and people are right to be fearful. A lot of it is driven by people's anger, and people are right to be angry. And then people feeling like, as you're saying, like, what can I do? What is there for me to do in this moment? And what I think is interesting is that this is coming from all over the state. Like, some of the most anguished stories that I have heard come from people living in rural communities in mm-hmm. Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Michael and Project Sweetie Pie do so much with urban farming, but the desperation and concern and anguish in rural Minnesota around the state of farming and whether we're gonna be able to continue to grow our own food given the deep economic challenges in rural America, the worries about whether hospitals are gonna be able to stay open if these level of Medicaid cuts continue. So there is a real, mobilizing that is happening that does give me some hope.
What did you think? This is something to laugh at a little bit about Elon Musk on television crying the blues about what Governor Tim Walz was saying about Tesla stock. And I think I heard, I couldn't believe it, Musk saying how hurt he was that that Governor Walz was doing evil things talking about Tesla stock. Here, the guy that's cutting millions of people out of jobs and work, gutting the economy, is saying that he's upset and that Tim Walz, talking about Tesla stock, is really a bad guy. What'd you think about that?
Well, you know what I thought about is how, I thought two things. One, I thought how, you know, in my life, I've met a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life, including I've met a lot of people who are very successful, CEOs and very wealthy people. And in general, generalizations can be dangerous, but often those folks pretty much assure they're smarter than everybody else.
We got 10 seconds. Go ahead.
And they do not appreciate that their life experience is not like everybody else's life experience. So what I hear there is just how deeply out of touch he is, and also how he doesn't even know it.
Tina Smith, let's stop. Thank you so much for dropping in. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for coming back and talking about what's on the horizon for you.
Jonathan, Michael, and Glenda, thank you so much. We'll see you next time. I'm Al McFarland. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM.